Guys, we're going to get started on our message today, and we're going to be in John chapter 9, and so it's on the YouVersion app if you wanted to like look for that under the event section. It's also on our mobile phone thing app, and so we're in John chapter 9. You can do it the hard way to open your paper Bible and turn to John chapter 9. So often there are certain aspects of our life we do not like. Can we like agree with that? Okay, there's certain parts, you know. So it could be like our life circumstances. It could be like, you know, the car you drive. Or it could be something like maybe more deeper than that, you know. But some circumstances, like, so it could be a material thing. It could be like, and maybe there's something like you don't like your nose, okay? You know, like I have a perfectly shaped nose, so like aerodynamic. I have a nice huge nose, and like I can like part the wind with my face, right? And maybe there's parts of us, you know, we don't like. It could be, you know, it could be a bodily feature. It could be, you know, a circumstance where we're at in life. It could be like a struggle, or maybe something bad happened. You know, I mean, our lives, we're humans. It's complicated. Stuff happens, right? And our lives are just like an accumulation of mess, right? Could you, we all agree on that? Life's complicated, messy sometimes? Okay. So for the rest of you that didn't raise your hand, you're in denial. So, but sometimes it's maybe because of decisions we made. I mean, let's just say, face it. I look at my life, and sometimes there's, I'm kind of responsible for some of the mess I'm in. Do you know what I'm saying? And sometimes I look at that and I'm like, man. And then sometimes, though, it's caused by someone else. Ever been living in some circumstances that were caused by somebody else, right? And then sometimes it's just, maybe you're just born with it. You know, like you can't choose your parents, right? And you can't choose your genes, you know. The other day, I was at Wayne Stack's birthday party the other day. And then you guys know that I sweat a lot, you know, it's kind of in my genes. And Jill Wilson said the other day that she was sweating. She goes, oh, no, I have what Jeff has. I'm like, what is that supposed to mean? I was like, that's Jeff's disease, right? And so whatever. So, but like, I can't, that's like my DNA. I blame my dad, right? And why not? My kids are blaming me. So Father's Day, we'll just blame each other, right? So, but sometimes there's just stuff that is, you know, we have to deal with. Sometimes when we have like these circumstances, we tend to think about why. Like, why me? What, God, why did you let this happen to me? Or we look to try to find somebody to blame. You know, we don't want to take ownership of it, so we want to blame somebody else. Or sometimes, though, maybe we do blame ourselves, and that way we have an out for, we have a reason why we can't do something, you know, like, you know, and I made this mistake, and because of this mistake, I can't do this anymore over here, and it's like an easy out for us. Sometimes, maybe we just think we deserve it. Privately, like, maybe I just deserve this bad situation, and so we don't try to fix it. It's just easier to be complacent in our sin, or actually complacent in the mess that we have, and, but usually we blame other people. Is that not true? Usually we blame other people, you know? And so sometimes we can get so focused on blaming that we don't move forward, right? Sometimes it's so easy to blame somebody else that we don't move forward. And so the question is, how can we change how we live and think when life has thrown us a curveball? As I was writing this down the other day, I realized some of you aren't baseball fans, okay? So for those of you that are missing out on America's pastime, okay, the fastball is straight, easy to hit. A curveball curves, right? And so it's kind of tricky. There's lots of talented people in the minor leagues that can hit a fastball, but they can't hit the curve or the slider, which is the same type of pitch, right? And life sometimes throws us curveballs, right? And right, what do we do with that? So we're going to look at the story of a guy who's blind, okay? So we're looking at a guy who is blind, and clearly, let's just say if he was, he might have some reason to be disappointed in his life, right, if he was born blind. So here we are in John chapter 9, verse 1. As Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Isn't that interesting? They passed by a guy that is blind, and the first question they asked Jesus was, who sinned? See, they thought his weakness or his limitation was the result of sin. They were blaming, weren't they? They're like, who's at fault? Because if he was born blind, it's really hard to fault, you know, a baby that was just born, right? Like, how did he do something wrong? So like, was it his parents? And so the idea was like, because they sinned, that God would have judged their child, right? And so Like, why would they think this? It's a kind of a curious question, isn't it? And so it kind of goes back to a passage in Deuteronomy 28. And we're not going to read it, but I'll just give you the overall view. God was making a pact or a covenant with the people of Israel. And basically, the covenant said this: if you obey my commands and my law, I'm going to bless you like crazy. I'm giving you like the Reader's Digest version. I'm going to bless you like crazy if you just obey my directions and commands. If you don't obey my directions and commands, I'm going to discipline. I'm going to discipline you, okay? And so they thought, well, maybe that child is blind because God was disciplining parents. That's kind of a strong statement, isn't it, right? And so sometimes there's parts of our lives that we don't like, and sometimes we have like these limitations. This guy clearly had a limitation. He was blind. He could not see. And they viewed his blindness as punishment, but Jesus didn't view his blindness as punishment, but as an opportunity for God to be seen. So here we go. Verse 3 says this. Jesus answered them. He goes, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him." So the disciples thought that somebody had done something wrong and he was being punished for it. But Jesus said, he's not being punished. This is like an opportunity for God to be displayed in his life. So here's the thing we need to remember. The first thing, remember there is a bigger purpose in play. There's a bigger purpose in play in our lives. So often we get so caught up with ourselves and how it relates to us that we forget the bigger picture. I mean, this guy was born blind. Just think how many times throughout, every day he probably wished he could see stuff, right? He'd hear stuff. And he's like, what does that look like? And so he had some reasons to be frustrated with his life, but there was a bigger purpose in play. There's a bigger purpose. And it goes on and says this, we must work, and Jesus goes this, we must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am the world, I am the light of the world. And so the blind man had a bigger purpose than he realized. And even Jesus recognized that he's here doing the work of his Father. So just like for the blind man, it's not about his life. And for Jesus, it's not about his life. He's doing what God is asking him to do. So there's always like this bigger purpose. It's not just in that moment. And then it goes on and says this, verse 6, having said these things, Jesus spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Clearly, Jesus was not aware of like germs, right? And so could you imagine? This blind man's there, and I always wonder what it was like because he can't see, right? So Jesus is coming along, and he's probably hoping he's going to get his sight, right? And he's just waiting for Jesus to go be healed or have sight. And instead, he hears, psst. You know what I mean? It was not a very good spitting sound, but you get the idea, right? And he's like, what is going on? And there's like this silence because all the people are like probably going, Jesus just spit. Does the Son of God spit? Right? Yes, he does, I guess, right? So there's like probably like this silence, like, oh my gosh. And then he's like, what is he doing? And he's like maybe hearing some like rustling on the ground as Jesus is making like some mud. And he puts it on his eyes. And then he tells him to go wash in this pool. Did you guys get this? Why spit on the mud? You ever wonder why? Anybody ask why did he spit? I know Mackenzie asked this because he talked about this last week at your house, right? So why does Jesus spit? I don't know. Okay? But I have two things to consider, I want you to think about, okay? 2 weeks ago, I mentioned the other miracle that took place in Jerusalem. Remember, there's only two miracles recorded in John, actually in all the Gospels, in Jerusalem. And both of them had to do with water. Do you remember this? And I tied to all of this David and all that, right, from the Old Testament, where David, the people of Jerusalem did not want David to be their king, and they said the blind and the deaf, the blind and the lame, the blind and the lame will keep you out. Remember this story? And David had the people come in through the water, the water tunnels to get into the city and defeat them and all that stuff. And so here we have the, so the last time it was the lame, and now we have the blind person, goes back to that whole 2 Samuel passage we talked about before, and Jesus makes mud, and he sends him to a pool of water, which also ties in with the story from 2 weeks ago, right? So the only two miracles in Jerusalem involve water, and it goes back to that passage in 2 Samuel. Isn't that amazing? It's kind of cool. But also, here's why I think it's also important for us today. Jesus is not predictable. I know we would like a predictable God, right? We would like it if it was, you know, Jesus did the same thing. Because here's the problem, though. If every miracle Jesus did the same way, if he said something like, you know, if every time Jesus healed a man, he said, "Man, may you be healed." Or if it was a woman, he's like, "Woman, may you be healed." We would have like a "may you be healed" ministry at a church, right? We would copy those words and we would begin to trust in those words instead of trusting the person who said the words. It's human nature, right? You may disagree with me on this one, but I'll just go with it anyways. A while back, there was this huge like to-do in the Christian world about the prayer of Jabez. And it was like 4 verses in the Old Testament, and Jabez prayed that his borders would be bigger. And like the whole curriculum came out about, may your borders be bigger, right? And we copied some words, kind of forgot about the whole God part behind it. We copied some words and thought, like, if we use the right words, we can have the same results. You're surprised. People do this all the time, okay? We tend to gravitate to things like that. And so Jesus mixes it up. They're like, surely he's just going to put his hands in his eyes, or like a Jedi, you know, and then he has sight. But no, Jesus is something different. He's not predictable. Because we're supposed to trust in him. We don't trust in the special words he says, or you know, the motions. It's about him. He keeps us guessing how he does stuff, so we believe in him instead of his technique. Churches are so fascinated about techniques of church stuff, right? But it's really about the God. Isaiah 55, verse 8, 9 says this. God's speaking, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." He's like, we think differently. And we're supposed to be following him, right? So Jesus keeps us guessing. Let's see what happens next. Verse 8, "The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, 'Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?' And some says, 'It is he.' Others said, 'No, he's like him.'" So it's not him. It looks like him, right? And he kept saying, "I am the man." I think it's funny. If you ask somebody, like, "Are you Bob?" And the guy goes, "I'm Bob," you would think that Bob would know, right? But they're having like this debate. Is this the guy? And I don't know. And he goes, I'm the guy. And so they said to him, "Then how were your eyes opened? If you're Bob, how can you see, right? How are your eyes opened?" And he said, "The man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' So I went and I washed and received my sight." And they said to him, "Where is he?" And he's like, "I don't know." You see, because when Jesus left him, he was still blind, right? And he had to go to the pool to get his eyes washed. And so here's what I want you guys to see this. It's so important. Tell your story. Okay, just tell your story. When you're in a difficult situation and maybe things are not going right, tell your story of what Jesus is doing in your life. You see, these people saw the changes in his life, and they're asked about him. This guy, he's not given like any theological reason. He's like, "Well, I went to the pool of Siloam, which means sent, and so therefore I was sent to you." He's not attaching some theology to it. He's not explaining like, you know, how Jesus reframe the molecules in his eyes. He is just telling his story. And so many times we feel like we can't talk for Christ because we don't know enough, or because our life is not perfect, or because we don't know what to say. Just tell your story of what Jesus is doing in your life. That's what he did. You see, when you tell your story, when you tell your Jesus story, they hear what Jesus can do. If you hide your flaws and you hide your hurts and you only highlight your accomplishments like you on Facebook, you get the praise instead of God. Do you realize that? When you only talk about the things that you can do, you get the praise instead of God. And it's about bringing praise to God. The goal is not for people to think you're a good person. We want you to be nice people, right? But the goal is not for people to think you're a good person. The goal is for them to see a good God working in you. Matthew 5:14 says, in the same way, Jesus is speaking, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Not give glory to you and I, but to give glory to the Father in heaven. It's a small difference. We should live lives that reflect Christ, right? But the goal is to give glory to God and not ourselves. And so this guy is just telling his story. He's like, I don't know what happened. He made some spit. He made some mud. He put it in my eyes. I went to the pool. Now I see. And he just tells his story. It goes on and says this. So, this is a big to-do. They brought him to the Pharisees, the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, he put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and I see. Really simple. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. But others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? So like this big debate, once again, over how could Jesus be God's son if he's doing miracles on the Sabbath, right? And so it's not computing for them. But others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. So they're arguing. And so they said again to the blind man. So they're arguing. They can't make sense of this. So they talk to the blind man. And they say, what do you say about him? That makes sense, right? Like, we don't know what's going on here. What do you say about him since he's opened your eyes? And the man says, he's a prophet. So he doesn't say he's the son of God. He doesn't say he's a sinner like some of the Pharisees said he was. He's like, he's a prophet. It says here, the Jews, which is actually the Pharisees, the religious leaders, did not believe that he had been blind and received his sight. I love this. Okay. They're like, Jesus clearly cannot be a prophet or the son of God because he breaks the Sabbath. But this guy says he healed him, and that would prove that he's the son of God, and that can't be because he broke the Sabbath. Our only other logical option is the guy's lying, and he wasn't blind. He's making the whole thing up, right? That's the option, right? And so they said, that's got to be the solution. So what do? They bring in his parents. And so they called the parents who had received the guy who received his sight and asked them, is this your son who you say was born blind? Duh. Right? Like, is this your son? Yeah, I know. Yeah. And so they asked him if there was a son. And his parents answered, we know that he is our son and he was born blind. But how he now sees, we don't know. Nor do we know who opened his eyes. And they say, ask him, he's of age. He'll speak for himself. Now his parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be Christ, he'd be put out of the synagogue. Therefore his parents said, he's of age, ask him. So here's the scenario. The Pharisees are so sure that Jesus can't be the Christ that this guy had to be making up this whole story, right? And so they want to bring in the parents to kind of prove that the guy's lying. But the parents go, no, he was born blind. We know this. We've been taking care of him for a long time. He was blind, right? And so they're like, well, then how did it happen? And here's the scenario. The parents realize that if they speak positively to Jesus, they're going to get kicked out of their synagogue. Now, this may not mean a lot to you, but back then, that was like the center of their social circle, and it was also like their financial safety net if things went wrong. Okay? So it'd be kind of like this in your scenario. If you were to speak up for Christ, you would lose all your friends and your financial safety net. And so therefore, they just passed the buck on to their son. Like, he can speak for himself. Okay? The parents are afraid of the consequences. They don't want to be isolated. They want that security that the synagogue offered for them. And so they're like, let him say it instead. So verse 24 goes on and says, so for the second time, they called the man back and who had been blind and said to him, give glory to God. That sounds so spiritual, doesn't it? They're like, don't talk about Jesus. Give glory to God. We know that this man, Jesus, is a sinner. And he answered, I love this, whether he's a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see. You guys, that should be like the crux of your Jesus story. I don't know everything. I don't know how all the theology works sometimes. But here's what I know. I was this, and now I am this. Who can argue with that, right? These Pharisees can't argue with it. And so they go on and says, one thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see. And they said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? Now the guy's getting a little bit confident. And he answered them, I've told you already, and you wouldn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become one of his disciples? He's kind of getting brave. And they reviled him, saying, by the way, I like how he's speaking up. This is totally me at school. I speak up in class. And sometimes my teachers like it, sometimes they don't. And because I just can't control myself. But so he just speaks up and he's like, do you want to become his disciples? And so they're not happy with him now. And they reviled him, saying, You are his disciple, but we're disciples of Moses. They thought that was a better plan. They were wrong. Verse 13 goes on, we know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we don't know where he comes from. And the man answered, I love this. Why, this is an amazing thing. You don't know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to him. Wait, sorry. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. So he's like, so clearly God listens to this Jesus guy because he opened my eyes, right? And he goes on and says, never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Dude, he's just like pouring it on. You can just see his confidence growing as he's talking. And they answered him, you were born in utter sin. And would you teach us? And they cast him out. And this was not just out the door. This was out of the synagogue. Okay? So they went back to that whole idea. This is interesting. You were born in sin, which was the idea that because he was blind, he was a sinner, right? But now they have to admit that he was blind for their whole accusation to even work, right? And they cast him out. And what I want you to see here again, once again, same point, tell your Jesus story. In the face of his parents' fear, his parents were afraid, and they were afraid of the anger of the religious leaders, but he told his Jesus story anyways. Why? Because he knew that Jesus had changed his life. He was like so excited about what Jesus had done in his life that he's like, I don't care if I get cast out. This is what happened. He changed my life. I was blind, but now I see. The question we have to ask is, do you guys think Jesus has changed you? Or do you think you've achieved all your life on your own? See, he realizes that Jesus did this. So what does Jesus want from this man? Okay, so later on, it goes on in verse 35, I think. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, okay? And having found, so Jesus heard they cast him out, the scuttlebutt in town, right? You know, it's like on Instagram. Blind man was see, but now he cast out the synagogue. And Jesus finds it, right? Finds him. And he says, do you believe in the Son of Man? And he answered, this is so beautiful. He's like, who is he, sir? He's like, who is he, sir, that I may believe in him? So at this point in time, he's like, Jesus, just tell me what's going on. Tell me. And if you want me to believe in him, I'll believe in him. And he's open because he recognizes what Jesus did for him. And Jesus said to him, you have seen him. Ironic, since he was blind before. You have seen him. And it is he who's speaking to you. He's like, so the first question was, do you believe in the Son of Man? He's like, who is he? And Jesus goes, I am the Son of Man. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Guys, Jesus asks for you to believe in him, to trust him. So we need to remember that there's a bigger purpose in play. We remember that Jesus is not predictable. We tell our Jesus story, and he's asking you and I to believe in him in those moments of difficulty. This doesn't mean the moments aren't difficult. Okay, I don't forget how old this guy was. I'm not sure if it, I don't think the text says, but he was blind a long time. He's a man now. He can speak for himself. So at minimum, 18 years. Okay, and so let's say let's go like 25 for an average. Okay, let's say he's 25 years old and he's been blind for 25 years. And the point is, his blindness was an opportunity for God to get the glory. It was an opportunity for us to have like this big debate with the synagogue people, right? It's an opportunity for us to talk about it 2,000 years later. But honestly, at age 18, the guy was probably mad he was blind, right? It still cost him something. It still hurt. But now he can realize it was part of a bigger purpose. There was a bigger purpose in play. It doesn't diminish the frustration or the pain that we're going through, but it matters for something. Do you see that? And in that situation, we're still drawn to believe in him. So the other day, I had a good week. Can you tell I had a good week? Okay, so I had a good week. And I got to play with my power tools, which always helps. But I had this thought. The other day, I had like some really cool like sessions this week. And I walked out feeling good about it, right? And as I thought about this, you know why I'm doing counseling? Because of the previous 7 years that were complicated, right? Do you realize that, right? I didn't like just like wake up one day and go, hey, I'm thinking about going to school again. There was like this process of going to my own personal therapy and all this stuff, right? And really painful years. I'm not saying I want to do those years again. I am not saying that, okay? But there is a bigger purpose in play. Right? And I can tell my story of how I walked through this difficult time and God walked with me and how he used that to do this and that. And did you see that? And so I remember I was like so happy that day thinking about what happened that previous day. And I'm like, that was great. And I'm like, I don't think I want to change a thing. Well, that was a really painful couple of years ago, right? But you see the idea behind that is that we're in difficult space. We face difficult obstacles. We endure hardships, and we don't understand why God would allow those things to take place. And how do we respond to those things? How can we be the best we in those times? And it's if we remember there's a bigger purpose in play. It's not just about you. It's not just about me. There's a bigger purpose in play. And Jesus is not predictable. There's lots of times in my life where I really felt that Jesus, because he was God, should have done things differently in my life. Okay, like clearly this is not how a God would act. That was my thought process. Do you understand that? I know it sounds kind of sacrilegious, but if there is justice in the world, this didn't seem right, right? And if God is just, then he should have fixed this, right? And so I look at that and I'm like, God, you should do this. But the truth is this, Jesus is not predictable. He's got a bigger picture than I do. His plan exceeds my 47 years. You know what I mean? And I get stuck in my years, and Jesus is not predictable. He sees more. He understands how it all fits together. And so when we're going through those difficult times, God doesn't always act how we want, but guess what? He's not predictable. That's just how he is. He's bigger than us. But he still wants us to tell our story. And our story doesn't always have to make sense. We don't have to know all the information. This guy knew very little. He knew he was blind, and Jesus spit and made mud, and he gave him sight. That was his theology. He couldn't explain the Trinity. He didn't know how the world was created. He didn't understand, you know, how his sins have been paid for yet, because Christ hadn't died on the cross yet. This dude was limited. But he told his story, and then Jesus asked him to believe him. And the guy did. And I think he's asking us the same thing. As we're going through difficult circumstances, that he's saying, trust me. I'm here with you. Trust me.